This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Picked off at the 30-yard line, Marco Wilson, and then he does a flip into the end zone for the touchdown.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Calm down, we're good. You know, we're going to make it right. We did a scoring, so that was good.
Today's guests, Jets head coach Robert Sulla, UCLA head coach Chip Kelly, Bears linebacker Roquan Smith, actor Ryan Phillippe. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Yes, it is. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show, right here on the Roku channel, channel 210, here in Los Angeles, California, in Big Ten country. And in that regard, Chip Kelly's going to be coming on this program. He's a Pac-12 coach at the moment of the number 9 ranked team taking on number 10 Oregon. He's joining us in his final 2 years as a non-Big Ten coach. Big game for him this weekend. He's joining us on this program. So is Roquan Smith of the Chicago Bears. They're playing Monday Night Football to wrap up week number 7 that began last night. Ryan Phillippe, the actor, is a diehard Eagles fan, is making his way to the studio. He's on a bye week this week, but he's spending some time with us in advance of his new film, American Murderer. That's in hour number 3. And the head coach of the 4-2 New York Jets, Robert Sulla, is joining us in about 18 minutes' time. You should join us throughout this entire program. 844-204-RICH, number to dial, whether you're watching on Roku, channel 210, on any Roku device, Samsung Smart TV, Amazon Fire TV. If you're watching on any mobile device that you have, why not? Because you could just get the Roku channel for free through the Roku app. And then there's the RokuChannel.com, where you can watch us on any device, laptop, desktop, what have you, for free. We say hello to our podcast listeners. You can get our podcast for $0, 0 cents as well, thanks to the Cumulus Podcast Network, where all podcasts are acquired. We say hello to Channel 218 Sirius listeners and XM Channel 202. If you're listening on the Sirius XM app, it's 992. Oh, yeah, there's the Odyssey channel. You can listen to us there. And there's the Terrestrial Radio Network. There's our YouTube page, youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show. Holy crap, we're everywhere.
Everywhere.
I love it. I can't get enough
of
it.
No excuses.
I can't get enough of it. Chris Brockman is wearing salmon today, for crying out loud.
Orange.
That's salmon, brother.
No, it's not.
No, you're clashing with the rest of the yellow orangey lights. I don't know what's going on.
It's orange.
That's salmon.
Jay,
you're right near him. Jay Feller, Jason Feller, you're right near him.
Eyes checked. It's orange.
The helmet is orange.
It's salmon.
That is salmon.
Thank you. TJ Jefferson.
Well, you skipped Jay.
I didn't. I just asked him to confirm the salmonness.
You just didn't hear me.
Good to see you over there, TJ Jefferson. How are you?
It's good to be seen.
Like the candle.
It's lit. You know, basketball again is back.
Yes.
The Clippers run LA.
Yes.
And I love it.
The Clippers beat the Lakers last night. Russell Westbrook is dreadful. It's dreadful, right?
Oh, sad.
He's dreadful.
Sad, Russ.
Oh, gosh. You know what we're going to do later on this program? We're going to treat the sad first Russ. Two games of the NBA season so far, even though the Clippers have played just one, like it's the NFL. We're going to completely overreact to it.
I'm into that.
That's going to be later on in this program. A new segment, treating the NBA like it's the NFL.
I'm into
that. Even, you know, as if there's not, you know, 98% of the season still to go.
Might be early for that.
TJ Jefferson is ignoring the fact that his Sixers are 0-2. So again, if this was in the NFL, the Sixers would be, their season's over. Joel Embiid should be traded, and Doc should be fired.
Yes.
And
I love the way you two immediately go to the negative. I tried to bring up some
that's
positive.
That's the NFL.
Clippers,
I'm saying it's the NFL.
Of course, you had to throw there, but the Sixers lost.
It's the NFL. Well, that's what happens when you have multiple teams.
Wow.
My team in the NFL is 4-2. I can't wait to talk to my coach in 16 and a half minutes. I'm like, who's counting? So if this was just any old Thursday night football conversation on a Friday morning, we would talk about last night's game. Certainly since it's the Arizona Cardinals getting DeAndre Hopkins back, and boom, look at this. We got Kyler Murray having a passer rating of 3 digits for the first time all year. And then all of a sudden DeAndre Hopkins has 100 yards receiving, and there's a 40 burger. And Andy Dalton's throwing pick sixes that aren't his fault. And the New Orleans Saints fall to 2-5. Holy crap. And the Arizona Cardinals now have 3 wins. Everybody in the NFC West has 3 wins. Eno Benjamin has over 100 yards from scrimmage. He's scoring touchdowns. Arizona's 3-4. And Kyler Murray is yelling at his coach to calm the F down. And after he's telling his coach to calm the F down, they score a touchdown and a 2-point conversion, tie the game. 2 pick sixes happen. Boom. Arizona's got 3 wins now. But there's another 3-win team in the NFC West. I'm not talking about the defending Super Bowl champion Los Angeles Rams. And I'm not talking about the 3-3 Seattle Seahawks, who are coming here to SoFi to take on the 4-2 Chargers this weekend. in one of the top five games I'm looking forward to. That was a list I gave you yesterday.
I like that one.
No. I'm talking about the team that just acquired Christian McCaffrey in a trade last night. Okay. So the Shanahans and the McCaffreys all together again, like they're the Waltons. We know that Ed McCaffrey were number 87 for those Denver Broncos championship years for Papa Mike. And now Kyle, who wore 87 in honor of Ed McCaffrey when he was in college at Texas, he's now got Ed's kid. So Mike's kid is coaching Ed's kid. And they're trying to win a championship just like the dads did. And Christian McCaffrey is back in the Bay Area, where supposedly he left his team in the lurch, and that was a red flag about how he didn't want to play football when he didn't play in his bowl game. And beware, you shouldn't draft him because the guy can't run between the tackles and he's going to get hurt a lot. And sure enough, he runs between the tackles quite a bit in Carolina to the point where they pay him a huge contract that the Carolina Panthers are now out from under. And McCaffrey did, over the last 2 years, prove to be a little bit more brittle than he would like to have been last 3 years he's had injuries.
I think he's played, what, Chris, 16 games, something like that, over the last 3 years?
The last 2 years has been the biggest issue for him. Last 2 years, he just played 10 games. He had 16 game seasons in his first three, and then in the pandemic year, it was dreadful. Okay. Last year, he couldn't stay on the field, and this year, he's played all six for Carolina.
When healthy,
so this is the issue with McCaffrey, and this is my issue with the trade for the 49ers, because you cannot throw the last 2 years out. You can focus on the first three. Mm-hmm. They get the first 3 years of McCaffrey, look out, because you've got McCaffrey, who I will never forget at the combine. At the combine, McCaffrey ran receiver drills better than most receivers at the combine.
Really?
Oh, yes. So they got a running back who could play receiver, and a receiver who can play running back, and a fullback who can play tight end. And they've got a tight end who can do it all, and they've got Ayuk on top of it. And they've got a ton of other running backs, as we know. And Trent Williams coming back to block for him. This is what you do if you're the Niners. You get parts that you can't read pre-snap what they're going to do. And Shanahan pre-snap coming up with the plan for them is all kinds of evil and so difficult for a defense to prepare for. McCaffrey, like I said, can do it all from that position. Debo can do it all from his position. Kittle, all world. Juszczyk, all world. They've got it. They got all the parts. If McCaffrey is healthy, you cannot leave that out of the equation. And fascinatingly enough, the team that apparently was in on this up until the end, and Scott Fitterer in this sudden auction of one of the top running backs in the league when healthy. Another team that was in on it at the very end was the Los Angeles Rams.
Of course.
Why wouldn't they be?
And this is a huge moment in the 2022 campaign in the NFC West. The Niners wind up with McCaffrey, not the Rams. As we all know, Cam Akers, it looks like he's not going to play another down for this team in Los Angeles at running back. You got Darrell Henderson and you've got Malcolm Brown. Kyren Williams, right? And so this is the running back core that the Rams are going to have to come out of the bye week with. And the running back core that the 49ers have includes McCaffrey going into this game against the Chiefs. And apparently McCaffrey's ready to just get out there. Why not? What is he going to do? Just stand around in his pajamas when the Niners are 3-3 and the Chiefs are coming into the house? No, I mean, kids from Stanford should be smart enough to pick up an offense that is in his own DNA, literally and figuratively. So go for it. And the Niners, I literally thought, I tweeted it out when I saw this trade, do they have any draft choices left? Because as we know, next year is the final year of that two-year deal that they made in terms of draft choices with Miami to go trade up for Lance in last year's draft. They don't have a first-round pick next year. And they gave away 2, 3, and 4 next year to go get McCaffrey and a 5th in 2024. So, yeah, the Niners do have choices left. They've got 2 third-round picks, compensatory picks, because they have a ton of compensatory picks that they've accrued because coaches of color have been hired elsewhere. Under the new rules that the league has set up, they get a compensatory pick for that. One of those coaches is coming up in about 10 minutes' time in Robert Saleh.
And the other one is Miami's head coach.
That's correct. Because Mike McDaniel is considered that. Mm-hmm. Look it up. Martin Mayhew's another one. So they have all of these compensatory picks. They still have two of them left. They've got a fifth and 2/7 next year. Smoke them if you got them, if you're a Niner fan, next year in Kansas City all the way till deep on Friday night. And go for it. Go for it. If this guy stays healthy, and he has so far this year, this is going to be a major problem. And 49er fans should feel great. Absolutely great. Like I said, running back who could play receiver. Receiver could play running back. Fullback who could play tight end. Tight end who is a great tight end. Other receivers who are great receivers. Coach who knows how to dial it up. Defense that has championship quality if healthy. Niners look terrific. Sitting there at 3-3 right now. I like it. I like the trade. Go for it. You got the ability to have your owner and Jed York say, go for it. And the general manager and the coach aren't looking over their shoulders saying, if this thing doesn't work out, are we going to get our asses fired? I told you, the seat in San Francisco, no matter how many times you say that the Niners underperform under Kyle Shanahan, whose overall record is 500, and right around it, hovering right around it, that seat is so not hot.
Okay. Well, he's out of excuses now.
And part of the reason why, Chris, is our first guest in the second hour, Chip Kelly, was a back-to-back, one of back-to-back one-and-dones in San Francisco. They didn't want to do that anymore. From Harbaugh to Kelly to Tom Sula, they just didn't want to do that anymore. And they got Kyle Shanahan, and they're sticking with him, and they're sticking with the program, and you stick McCaffrey in that program, if healthy, great. And if not, then the less need F all them picks mantra that clearly is now roosting in San Francisco, that might be a problem. Or Jeff Wilson, that's just going to be the guy that you're going to have. And then next year when you're sitting in Kansas City smoking him, if you got him at the top of the Friday night of the draft, you'll miss it. You'll miss it. And as for Carolina, they entered the week with just 14 picks over the next two drafts. Nine picks over the next two drafts. As for Carolina, they entered this week with 9 picks over the next two drafts, and that's it. Because they've been churning around and churning around. Sam Darnold here, right? Stephon Gilmore there. They've been churning it. They've been trying for Matt Rhule. They fire Matt Rhule. They bring in Steve Wilks. They send away Robbie Anderson on the field on a Sunday and then to Arizona on a Monday of this week, and now McCaffrey's gone. Voila. Now 14 picks over the next two drafts, 7 in each year. They're now back to, if you will, normal. Got it. This is what they're doing. They currently are number one overall in next year's draft in Kansas City. They fire their coach. They're on an interim head coach, and they send their best player on offense away. Do not take the cheese on the supposition that they are not tanking.
Yeah.
This is what's called tanking in the NFL. That's what it's called. Now, I say this with full respect that when Carolina takes on Tom Brady this weekend, they will go out on the field to try and win the football game. They will.
Yeah, of course.
Because these are all grown-ass men who want to win games, who put their bodies on the line, that say every week when they leave their house, I'll come home, and you don't know if their season or career is going to be over based on what's happening at work. I have nothing but the ultimate of respect of ownership, general manager, coach, and players. They're going to try to win. They're going to try and beat Tom Brady as hard as they can. The problem is you can't win football games in the NFL, if you're not sending your best players on the field, and if you're sending your best players elsewhere, you are not trying to win games. That's the difference between tanking in the NBA and the NFL. In the NBA, they'll just sit their best players right there and put them in a suit right in front of the entire paying customers.
Right, right.
Okay.
Load management. But
Brian Burns is going to play this weekend.
Right.
Okay.
Even though everyone wants him.
Everyone wants him. Yeah. DJ Moore is going to play this weekend.
Yeah.
They're going to try and win this game against Tampa. It's a lot more difficult, with all due respect, again, to Deontay Foreman and Chuba Hubbard. It's a much more difficult to beat the Bucs without Christian McCaffrey. So the Panthers will go about their business to try to win games. But you don't do your best to win the games if you're sending your players away. You're just, you know, trying to not win, as opposed to tanking completely in front of everybody. The Panthers right now, as I said, they are atop the draft order.
Number one.
And they're 1-5. And it's difficult. But they're only two games behind the winners, the leaders of this division. And the Saints are 2-5. You've beaten the Saints already with a win this weekend. You're 2-5. Brady's 3-4. Atlanta's in Cincinnati. Atlanta could be 3-4. And you're 2-5. And you're not in last place. And suddenly, you know, what would happen there if the Saints are in last place? And let's say Vegas and Detroit also win? The Saints could be atop the draft board, number one overall, and that would make Philadelphia number one, because Philadelphia owns the Saints pick. The Eagles could potentially be. Okay, because I don't know about strength of schedule and how this sort of works out.
Yeah,
just 7 weeks into an NFL season as to who has a tiebreak over whom. But the Eagles could sit on their bye week as the lone remaining undefeated team in the NFL and emerge from the week, from their week off, number one on the draft order. Now then, that's a large if, because Carolina is in the middle of a season, 2 weeks before the trade deadline, announcing to everyone, who wants anybody? You want to overpay for somebody, or you want to pay us a ton of draft choices? Sold. Sold.
Rich, I know you're a fantastic actor. We've seen you on CSI Miami,
billions,
and all kinds of movies. Billions. That was one of your finest performances, okay?
What was?
Because just the idea that Carolina might beat Tampa. Rich, that game opened at 10.5,
so what?
The spread. It's now 13.
It's
now
any,
that McCaffrey is gone.
It's
the Bucs got embarrassed last week.
Given
they are going to win this game by 40.
Sunday. It's any given Sunday.
Your finest performance.
Thank
well
you.
Done.
I'm just pointing out, though, at what is possible.
Sure, of course.
You're telling me what's most likely.
Yes.
Since this is a Friday, what's more
absolutely
likely?
Like that's 99% most
correct
likely.
And you can't look your fan base in the face and say, we're trying to beat Tom Brady this weekend while we're sending Christian McCaffrey
right
away.
Obviously.
Or doing our best to beat Tom Brady this weekend. And the players in that locker room have got to be looking around saying, who's next? What's going on? Poor Steve Wilks. You know, he gets one and done in Arizona. Now he's left with this. You try and win games here, Steve. You sell to the locker room. Let's go beat Tom Brady without Christian McCaffrey, as McCaffrey is now hanging out in his penthouse in San Francisco, right? For a team that everybody thinks can win the Super Bowl. He's sitting there hanging out with the Shanahans and the McCaffreys all together, raising a glass like it's St. Patrick's Day. And they're sitting there 1-5, wondering, who's next? Where's it going? So the Panthers will definitely say it's not a fire sale, we're not doing that. But they just sent away Christian McCaffrey prior to taking on a Bucs team that if they win, they're only one game behind. So they're looking at C.J. Stroud. They're going to see what Ohio State looks like against Iowa this weekend, and do their best to beat Brady, the Michigan man, the next day. The man who helped make this possible, because he left San Francisco and left behind a third round pick for the Jets, is joining us. 4-2 New York Jets. The head coach is going to be joining us on this program. Robert Saleh. After him, Chip Kelly. After him, Roquan Smith of the Bears. After him, Ryan Phillippe. Ryan Phillippe in studio. What's more likely from Chris Brockman? Fantasy advice from brother TJ Jefferson. He's going to open his fantasy church. You ready for that, TJ?
I stay ready, brother.
Okay,
Rich.
Very good. 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on the Rich Eisen Show. Don't you dare move. The head coach of the 4-2 New York Jets taking on Broncos country. Let's eat sandwiches. Robert Saleh coming up next.
Influencer. It's a word that gets tossed around a lot these days. There is a woman who went the distance, who broke ground as the first true influencer by living a remarkable life. Her name, Elizabeth Taylor. I'm Katy Perry. This is the story of the original influencer. This is Elizabeth the First.
Elizabeth the First, the podcast, wherever you listen.
844-204-RICH, number to dial here on the Rich Eisen Show. If you're looking to buy a new home, Navy Federal Credit Union has loan options and resources that help their members save and make sure they get the best deal. Right now, Navy Federal will contribute up to $1,000 as a lender credit towards closing costs on your new home. Plus, members save on their monthly payments since there's no requirement for private mortgage insurance. And that's not all. Navy Federal offers low rates and fees, too, so you could save even more. And Navy Federal's experts can help you choose the best option for you so the loan process for your home is as smooth an experience as possible. Navy Federal Credit Union is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Qualifying members with purchase mortgage applications after September 16th may receive up to $1,000 towards actual closing costs. Apply to closing with no cash back and subject to loan program maximum contribution limits. Terms subject to change. Ask your loan officer for details. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. The New York Jets, as you know, 4-2. Just take care of business at Green Bay. You know I went there, put a lone wolf hat on my head, so this man had to come on this show. We have to talk about what's going on there. He's on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line, and he's the head coach of the Jets, getting set to go to Denver, Colorado. He's Robert Saleh. How are you, coach?
I'm doing great, Rich. And yourself?
Well, I've got all gas. I've got zero brakes. I'm good. How are you?
There you go. I'm awesome. Every day is a blessed day.
So when do you think, when you looked out at the field, you saw what we've seen the last 3 weeks? You saw the beginnings of it. What do you got for me on that front?
No, in all honesty, you know, you're going through OTAs and training camp, and we're still not even close to where I think this team's going to get. And I'm not trying to, you know, downplay anything. We've got such a really cool core group of young guys, especially on offense. I mean, it seems like they're all first and second year players, and so they're not even close to gelling and hitting their full stride. We're still a bunch of 23-year-olds going against a bunch of 25 and 26-year-olds, and so it's really exciting to see the nucleus of this team kind of grow together, and all the guys who are contributing offense, defense, special teams. So you kind of saw the energy and the juice and the speed during training camp, and we're still, like I said, I still feel like we're a long way to go, but it's at least people are starting to see the same things we saw.
Now, I know you mentioned the offense. Interesting, you did mention that, because the kid that I'm kind of looking at and circling and watching blossom, you drafted a whole bunch of youngsters this year, is Quinnen Williams, and what he's doing and how he looks. And how, you know, the words all pro are easily rolling off my lips. What do you see with him, coach?
Same thing. You know, being an interior D lineman coming into the league is one of the harder positions to learn, aside from quarterback. Obviously, we all know quarterback's the hardest one. But when you start getting into the trenches, especially at the D line level, it's a completely different game in there compared to what they played in college. You're dealing with a different type of strength. You're dealing with a different type of speed. The way the ball comes out from a timing standpoint, just everything's different for those guys. And he was coming along his second year, and even last year, you know, he dealt with that injury in training camp or in the spring that kind of, it didn't derail his season because I still felt like he played well. It didn't allow him to play to the and prepare the way he was able to this year. And I think he's showing everybody what he could have showed last year. I mean, the guy is, when you watch tape, the amount of power and strain and tenacity that he plays with is as good as anyone. And it's just really cool to see when guys put in the work they put in, for him to see it in the form of production is pretty cool.
And earlier this year, Coach, there was a question about his snap count and his displeasure with it and his voicing it and his being demonstrative about it on a sideline. And I'm wondering if something like that, obviously you don't want to see anything that could be construed from the outside looking in as problematic, but I'm wondering if something like that registered with you, with the staff, with the team, to see that this guy just feed them. He's a beast. Just feed him. Is that something that I'm picking up or off on? What do you got for me there?
No, you know, he was never, I think Quinnen's all in on the D-line rotation. He was never, I'll defend that one in terms of, okay. He was never questioning the rotation. He just wanted a four-man rush. Yeah, in that moment. Like he was like, I'm a dog. I can win a one-on-one. Just let me rush. We don't need the blitz. You guys just go play coverage. Our D-line will take care of it. And what you love, that's what you want out of your D-line. I'm like, heck yeah, let's do it. Give him a four-man rush. And and when you don't have to pressure, it's the best way to win football games. It's the only way, not the only way, but it's the most consistent way to be elite quarterbacks is to just drop, overload the zones and play and win with a four-man rush. It's the way, I brought it up before, it's the way the old, you know, the Giants beat that Tom Brady team with a four-man rush. And, you know, so he's never been demonstrative in that regard. He's only been demonstrative in challenging us to trust him to win his one-on-ones. And you want that from your players. You want them to strive for those opportunities. And, you know, because his play time is up there with all, if you look at the teams that run our schemes, they're all very similar in that 68 to 74% range, which in the grand scheme of a game, you're talking about two or three plays. And so Quinnen is, he is the ultimate teammate. He's the ultimate locker room guy. He's the ultimate worker on the practice field. He's so coachable and guy, he's everything you'd want. He's like a poster child when it comes to being a professional football player.
He was everywhere in that backfield. He was everywhere. And you know, in every phase of the game, he was truly unbelievable. It was one of the best games I've seen a Jet play in quite some time in Green Bay. And then just to see Sauce Gardner coming into his own as well. You know how I feel about him and the conversations we've had on the show beforehand and how you chose him first in the draft this year. I'm wondering, what did you think of the cheese head on his head after the game, Coach? What did you think of that?
Well, if you know Sauce, you laugh because you know his personality. He doesn't have a malicious bone in his body, and he was just embracing the moment and having a good time. Where there's other people who would put the cheese head on, and you'd be like, "Man, that guy's being a jerk," but that's not Sauce. Anyone who knows Sauce knows he's fun loving. Even when he talks smack on the football field, he does it in a fun natured way. And I think he's just got this personality that gravitates people towards him. You know, he's a great young man. And now, do you want to do that? And you know, show up your opponent? You never want to do that. But knowing where his heart is and what he was doing, everyone in this building and anyone who's had a conversation with him knows he doesn't have a malicious bone in his body.
And Breece Hall is just beginning to shine that light as well that caused you guys to, I'm sure, maybe have a bit of a sleepless night from Thursday to Friday of draft week, where you knew he was still in play and you knew you had a shot to go get him and you knew, you know, you could kind of trade all the way up to the first spot of the first night to make sure it happened, but didn't. He's just been dynamite. Is he your bell cow back? Is that the plan for him, Coach Sala?
No, that this is what's great about our system, because Michael Carter, like, people better not sleep on Michael. You know, Michael got 7 carries in the game, especially in that fourth quarter when we started committing to the run game a little bit more, and he churned out explosive yards. He has a couple of touchdowns rushing. So we've got two backs that can go off at any moment. as it pertains to Breece, he's the hot hand right now, and he's done a lot of really, really good things. But just like I'd say about Quinnen, eventually teams are going to gear down to try to stop you. And it's like, great, do that. Because then it's going to create one-on-one opportunities for Carl Lawson. It's going to create one-on-one opportunities for Michael Carter. It's going to create one-on-one opportunities for Corey Davis and all the other receivers. So his emergence is awesome because it's going to create opportunities for all the guys that we feel like would strive in a one-on-one situation. And so we're excited about the direction that it's going, obviously, and teams are going to start gearing to focusing and trying to take people away, and we just got to be ready to counter when we can, and we've thankfully have the pieces to do that.
New York Jets head coach Robert Saleh here on the Rich Eisen Show. You mentioned your receiving core a little bit right there, Corey Davis and the rest of the receivers. I'm sure you knew I would be asking you about this question because it is the season of trade deadline nearing and so many other teams out there, you just visited one, would love to have a young receiver who wants out of another organization. And Elijah Moore has made it known he is not pleased with the current situation. And what is his current status right now, Coach?
I'm going to go on record. I do want to say, like, Elijah's a good kid. And so obviously whenever you do something like this, perceptions can be made and people will, and obviously perceptions, reality, all that stuff. But Elijah is a good kid. He's an absolute competitor and wants to help this team win. And in his mind, like if he's not able to do it here, he'd love to do it somewhere else. Well, he's going to be a big part of why we are successful. He is a huge part of this and he's a good kid, a competitor. He is not disrespectful. He's a phenomenal young man. I want to make sure that's clear. But he's fine. He's in the building. Obviously he's not going to play this weekend. He's got a workout regimen that he's going to follow over the next 3 days and he'll rejoin the team on Monday. But, as far as we're concerned, there's no intent in trading. We're not trading Elijah. For all the reasons why another team would love to have him. Well, we love that we have him. And he's going to be a big part of this. And he's part of the reason why when a guy like Breece Hall gets attention paid to him or Corey Davis or Garrett Wilson, it's why we can continue to keep, pick your poison. You can pick Braxton. You can focus on Elijah. You can focus on Garrett. You can focus on the tight ends, two backs, Corey. What do you want to do? And when those guys are all operating and hitting on all cylinders, it's very hard for a team just to focus on one guy because we can just run our offense. We don't have to – it's not just, okay, everyone knows it's going to this person, so let's just double and triple team them and take everyone away. So we're kind of spoiled in that regard, and they're very young, too. They're very young. So as they continue to find their niche and their style of play, it's only going to get better.
So he won't be on the team plane to Denver this weekend? Elijah?
He will not.
Okay.
No, he'll be here.
And when you mentioned earlier on in this conversation that the team's not close to where you think it can be, would you throw the passing game in that bucket right there, Coach?
It's everything. You know, can we get the run game going earlier? Can we get the pass game going earlier? You know, I referenced it a couple of times, you know, like in that Pittsburgh game, we're down two scores going in the fourth quarter and our pass game flexed its muscles. I think people forget that already. And when over 70 yards on two different drives against a really good defense in a hostile environment in a stadium that nobody wins in when Renegade plays to start the fourth quarter. And Zach and the passing attack and the protection was flawless and we win a football game. And then the last 2 weeks we've been blessed in the sense that we've been able to seize control of a game in the fourth quarter with our run game and our defense. So I don't think the pass game's lagging. You know, I think we played the fifth-ranked defense in football, a team that just prides itself on stopping the pass game, and we took what the defense was giving us, which was the run game. And now we're playing another team that's every bit as good as the team we played last week from a defensive standpoint, if not even better. And they're playing at a high level, and by all means necessary, we got to find a way to move the ball. So I don't think the pass game's lagging, but at the same time, I don't think it's anywhere near where it's going to go because they're all pups. They're all first and second year players still trying to find their footing. And I think if I'm a fan or if I'm a player or if I'm a coach, in this organization, I'm really, really excited. And if I'm not in this organization and I'm on the outside looking in, not a fan or a coach for another team, I'm very nervous about what's being created here.
Robert Sala here on the Rich Eisen Show. So before I let you go, where are the receipts you were talking about earlier this year? Where do you keep
no
those?
No receipts. No.
There's no. Where do you keep them? In a drawer somewhere? There's no receipts. There's no.
They're somewhere stashed away, and it's going to take a long time for those ever to come out.
Okay.
We got to do a heck of a lot more winning than this. So.
Okay. Well, I know for sure. On those receipts, wherever they do reside, the words Rich and Eisen are not on those receipts. They do not.
Absolutely not. You're one of the loyal ones.
I put on a lone wolf hat on NFL game day morning this week when the rest of my crew said Green Bay is going to win the game. And I said the cards are going to be put on the table by the Jets this week. And the last 50 years are over. They're going to tell people.
That was awesome.
Over.
That was awesome.
Over. And I believe it. I really do. I see what I'm seeing. I see what I'm seeing. I see what you're cooking. I see what you're doing. And I believe it. And so I say my ask my next question in that spirit here that, yes, you've got a big game against Denver, but the two Bills are coming up, Belichick and Buffalo. Those are the ones at home.
Yeah.
Those are the ones at home when you want to win your division and announce arrivals. Those are the ones. And I'm wondering how you envision week 8 and week 9. And I know I'm talking to a head coach in the NFL about something not this week, but I have to ask you, since I have you here now, how you view that before your bye, Coach Sala.
No, that's a fair question. And here comes the cliche. Obviously, we got Denver.
Yes.
But we pound in this building day in and day out on the moment. And mm-hmm. owning the moment isn't just showing up. It's isn't just being, you know, walking in the building. It's showing up with intent to treat every moment like a championship moment. So when we get those moments, we'll treat them accordingly. But in the meantime, we're focused on Denver.
Understood. Let's talk about the accordingly. You know what I mean? Like, so, I mean, it's Belichick and it's Buffalo. We know what this means, right? We know what this means.
It's always exciting. When you get a chance to play, you know, division opponents, all that is awesome and exciting. And but they're no bigger than last week. They're no bigger than this week. They're no bigger than the week after. It's when you start making games bigger than they need to be that they become it makes other games not championship-like, and every game's a championship moment.
I understand that. Win those games, and you want to talk about an arrival being announced? Oh my goodness gracious! That honestly, I'm jumping out of my skin a little bit about that, and I'm wondering if you have to do the same with these young kids. You've mentioned kids, pups, over and over again in this conversation, and rightfully so. You've got a very young, talented team filled with kids who came from winning programs. So do you sometimes need to, you know, calm them down a little bit like you're doing to me right now?
I don't know if they know any better yet. You know, that's the best part about it. They don't know the long history. They don't know the past. They don't know they're new to the division. So they don't know all the stories, and they will as they start playing in these games and they're told stories with questions and they're reading media guides and whatever it is. They'll start to learn the stories, and friends who are fans will tell stories about years past, and that's kind of how the rivalry gets built, and then something happens. It's just a lot of this will happen organically, but what's great about this team is they're so focused on the moment and finding ways to just improve every day, and it's not all going to be clean. Like I said, we've got a long way to go, but I do think it's exciting to see all this happening.
Coach, appreciate the time. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you out the door about your old spot and knowing the front office the way that you do, and Shanahan and Lynch and Jed York the way that you do, that they pushed that button on McCaffrey last night. What'd you think of when that might have crossed your mind there?
I woke up this morning to it, and you know, Kyle is a phenomenal. Kyle and John and the way they operate out of there is as good as anybody in ball. Everyone's in sync, everyone's in unison, and they know exactly which players they want to make to help their systems roll the way they need to. So I am not surprised. I'm just glad he's not in Buffalo.
Okay. Good answer, sir. Good answer. Thanks for the time. Best of luck in Denver, and let's connect down the line. Truly appreciate it.
A million times over. Thank you so much, Rich.
Right back at you. That's the head coach of the New York Jets, Robert Sala, right here on the Rich Eisen Show. You can listen to the NFL and the NFL app on the Odyssey app on WestwoodOneSports.com via Westwood One Station Streams or by asking Alexa to open Westwood One Sports, sponsored by AutoZone. When we come back, we turn to the New York Yankees and just button up the New York sports and the fact that we have now seen for the first time ever a team say the other team got lucky because wind was blowing in, and their express piece of evidence is exit velocity. You can't make this stuff up. That's coming up next. Back here on our terrestrial radio network, 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on the program. As you know, I am not anti-analytics at all. That there's a reason for numbers. Baseball is the most analytical game in that regard.
But your numbers are.
But I'm a little old school, yeah, that I want gut and feel to go with it, and I hate the shift, and I can't wait for the shift to be gone and all of that stuff. And I think it's ruined a game where everybody throws 100 miles an hour now, and it adds to the walk, strikeout, home run thing. Mm-hmm. But maybe I'm constantly railing against the walk, strikeout, home run thing because my team, the Yankees, leads the charge. Of the walk, strikeout, home run, like when they actually score a run on an extra base hit and a couple singles or sack fly or something like that.
You're like, whoa.
Yeah. I'm like that Joe Rogan gif, like, whoa.
Yeah,
you know,
Daniel
right?
Cormier.
All right.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I understand.
Well done.
So last night, Yanks fall down 0-2. Luis Severino gives up a 3-run shot to Alex Bregman. After the game, he says the Astros are lucky because Bregman's home run was wind-aided, or at least it wasn't knocked down by a wind in the same way that Aaron Judge's would be, looked like it, could be, it is high, it is far, it is not, out.
Well, roof was open.
Roof
That's
was
why
open.
They did. That's why they did
roof
that.
Roof was open.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, Bregman could hit it into the wind just like Judge did, but instead he didn't. And the evidence that you heard a little bit from Aaron Boone and the rest of those who are talking about this sort of thing for the Yankees is that Judge's exit velocity was over 100. It was like 106. And just mere 91 for Bregman. And we have now reached the point. We've now reached the point where one team is actually using this as an excuse or a fig leaf or what. And I can't believe it. Yeah. This is where we're at. Look at the exit velocity. One guy has an exit velocity of 91. Another guy has an exit velocity of 106. Which one hit the home run? Well, there was wind in one play. Now, how about this? It sounds like you hit the ball. You catch the ball. Stop lollygagging.
Yeah,
I feel like walking in to the locker room of my favorite team, who I adore, and throwing a bunch of bats on the floor.
Into the shower?
Moving some furniture?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what are we going to do here?
Turn over the ping pong.
Doesn't help that DJ LeMahieu and Andrew Benintendi, who are 300 hitters, are hurt. Right. It doesn't help. Yeah. But everybody's hurt at this time of the year. Altuve hasn't gotten a hit. And the Astros haven't lost a game.
That's so wild.
Okay, so that's where you have a deep bench, and you've got a deep team, and you've got a team that can throw the ball, catch the ball, hit the ball. Sometimes it's a simple game, and that's what the Astros are doing. And it kills me, because my buddy Paul, who you guys know I grew up with,
yep.
He said it perfectly. He texted it to me last night, and it hit me like a gut punch to the point where I couldn't even respond. So I got your text.
Hey, my best
Pablo.
Friend.
This is what he texted me. And this I find it difficult to rebut, but it's tough to read. They're basically the Bulls to our 90s Knicks, is how he referred to the Astros.
Man, that's a... Oof. You're right. That is.
They are basically the Bulls to our 90s Knicks. We've got a good team. We've got a good team that would ordinarily win it if it wasn't for that team. And the Astros are that team. I don't know who the Jordan. I guess there's a Jordan. There's a Jordan.
Yeah, the Jordan.
Okay, the Jordan rules.
Right.
Which is you walk him.
But Bregman is like hitting everything, finding every gap.
They're just that good.
Pena's
man.
Awesome.
They're that freaking good.
Is Pena Pippen right now?
I can't go down this analogy because it hurts me too bad to admit it.
Yeah.
There's more games. I get it.
Hey, going home now. Like they did what they were supposed to do. They won the two home games.
Going home and the wind blows for everybody and the exit. Like, I can't believe we're parsing it like this.
Well, you have your really short porch and right.
Whatever.
And so I'm sure
okay. I'm not even
going to
take
there.
That cheese. I'm not taking that cheese. But we've reached the point of the analytics era. We're like, that guy's home run ball. We shouldn't have left the yard. It wasn't even close to the exit velocity of the guy who's had it wind blown it back in the stadium. Like, come on. Hit it. Catch it. Pitch it. Quit lollygagging.
That's simple enough.
About the analytics.
Breathe.
Chip Kelly coming up next for UCLA.
But you're right, Rich. That's loser talk. Like, oh, well, our numbers said that we should have. Did you win or lose? Oh, you lost. Okay, cool. Do better. Don't strike out 30 times in two games.
24 is what it is.
Was it?
Yeah.
I thought I saw 30.
That was just a mere 7 strikeouts apparently last night. Man, I think I saw the number of 24 through two games. Yeah. It's just.
That's way too many.
You know, and they've got a really good team. I mean, Severino really, he battled. He battled, and the rest of the team is just, it feels less than. And it's the Astros again. So, we'll see what happens when they go back to the Bronx, to the boogie down. Saturday, Sunday, and hopefully Monday. I honestly, last night I'm glad I was doing the rehearsal game.
You weren't paying that close attention?
Well, I mean, I had to, you know, work as a lead pipe wielding professional to call the game, you know, as if I was mock calling the game, but I had, you know, I had my one eye on something else when I could. And, you know, reading about it and hearing the soundbite of, you know, from Judge calling it, they thought it was a 390 ball, meaning 390 footer from Judge.
I mean, the Astros only scored 7 runs in 2 games. I mean, that's,
you should win.
Yeah,
you got to get some hits. You got to scratch them together. But if you're, it's just like a 3-point shooting basketball team. Some nights you're going to be off, and those nights you're going to lose.
Rich, the Yankees struck out 13 times last night.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah.
That's 30.
Hey, gents, let's talk Halloween for a second.
What is your favorite Halloween memory?
One time I saw Nightmare Before Christmas performed live at the Hollywood Bowl.
Walking with your kids.
It felt so magical.
And after they've got their candy and they walk away.
So pure.
The dad inside the house is handing you a beer.
My dad, when I get home, he would have me like empty out all the candy to make sure that it's safe. And it wasn't until I was about 35 that I realized, what the f***? He was just eating my candy. Rude.
What's your favorite Halloween costume?
One year I was Matthew McConaughey's character from Dazed and Confused.
One year I was like, I would like to be roadkill.
The Halloween costume was a plastic smock and then a really scratchy plastic mask. I mean, you were styling if you had one of those.
Aquaman, the plastic mask cutting into your eyes and then you get that little hole in the mouth to breathe through all night long.
What's your favorite Halloween candy?
What's your fave candy, Mandy? Oh, that rhymes.
Anything Reese's, Snickers bars.
It's all the food groups.
It's
got
a meal.
Nuts, you got caramel. Yes.
Candy corn. I love
me too.
Corn. Wait, really?
I'm one of the small percent of people who actually really enjoys candy corn. It gets a bad rap.
Thank you so much, everyone. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween from the Cumulus Podcast Network. Make sure to subscribe and follow us at youtube.com/CumulusPodcast.
Candy corn is terrible. It's atrocious. It shouldn't be allowed. It's not a candy.
Ooh. Happy Halloween.